Hey listeners, we're in the heat of one of the greatest sports events of the year. You guessed it, March Madness. And the best place to stay on top of all the NCAA tournament coverage? CBS Sports HQ. What is CBS Sports HQ? It is the free 24-hour sports network that's built for fans just like you. From nonstop highlights to news and analysis, CBS Sports HQ has got you covered. Check out CBS Sports HQ. It is always on and always free. No need to pay a subscription fee or have an expensive cable package. Download the CBS Sports app on your phone, Fire TV, Roku, or Apple TV to start watching today.
You are listening to Let's Talk Tribe, the official Let's Go Tribe podcast.
Swung and lined to deep left field. It is gone!
Hit well. Deep right. Batista's going to wave goodbye. Start the fireworks show.
This is Let's Talk Tribe, the official Let's Go Tribe podcast, episode 114. I am your host, Matt Lyons, and on this week's episode, we have some thoughts on the Twins series and the game against Chicago we watched on Monday. Mike Clevenger promised velocity, and he delivered it. Are we worried about Jose Ramirez's slump or Francisco Lindor's injury? Kyler Nakin looks abysmal at the plate, and the Indians are doing some things to keep Corey Kluber on an even schedule. How will it affect Shane Bieber and our ability to watch Shane Bieber, most importantly? Before we get into all that, I want to thank everybody listening live now, or wherever they're listening, whether it's on iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher, or quite frankly, I don't know where this podcast goes anymore. When I took it over, it goes to all kinds of places. So if you listen to this somewhere that I don't know what it is, just let us know. That'd be cool to know what you can actually find Let's Go Tribe on. But if you are, no matter where you're listening, make sure to give us a review, stars, whatever your preferred service has to help us out. Joining me for all that and more is none other than Mr. Merritt Rolfing. Merritt, how you doing?
Oh, I'm fantastic. That's all I got. No other witty repartee.
Nothing about yeah. a baseballs or Red Dead Redemptions or got nothing today.
No, I had a pretty the cherry blossoms were in bloom in DC this weekend and they were lovely. So if you have a chance, the next 2 to 3 days from when we're recording this, not even really when you hear it, get down to DC, see the cherry blossoms around the Jefferson Memorial. They're delightful. So that's my travel tip of the week. What's that?
Merritt's travel tip of the week. I said that has nothing to do with Red Dead Redemption. What's wrong with you? There's no cherry blossoms.
Busy doing stuff. Baseball started, so I'm distracted, and my wife hates me again. So you know how it is.
The best time of the year, you know.
It really is.
Neglect everything to watch baseball at night. It's really
good. My brother won a hot dog eating contest on opening day. So you're one. The listeners here are now 2 steps away from championships. So there you go. I mean, it may not be the Indians, but it's something.
So is that like at the DC home opener, or where does he live?
He lives here in DC as well. We went to there's a bar here in town that has a hot dog eating contest on opening day.
Oh, so it wasn't like at the stadium. That
doesn't matter. No, it was just at a bar. But, you know, whatever.
He just won a hot dog contest that happened to be on opening day.
Well, it's a Cubs, or it's a Chicago / Detroit focused bar. So they put on that. So he won either a Tigers or a Cubs jersey. Not my favorite teams, but you know, whatever.
I'll allow it, I guess. Hot dog contest is the hot dog contest. You win right. That, you're set for life, I think is what they say. That's
plus financially, emotionally. One of the guys competing in it was obviously just there for the free hot dogs. He was not competing at all. He was standing there casually eating a hot dog.
And that free hot dogs are free hot dogs, man.
That man is the true hero. I'll say that much. He knew what he was doing.
Well, like you said, we got to watch some baseball. We watched the Twins series, which was considerably more miserable than the game we watched Monday with the White Sox. So let's just kind of go over what we've seen so far. I think the first part we can start with is just the up and downness of Jose Ramirez. The first two games, he tried to bunt himself aboard to start the game just to beat the shift. The third game, it kind of worked. The third baseman stayed somewhere around third base until after the first strike. Then he started roaming around again. But it seemed like at first that the Twins are just in his head. He didn't come into the season like with his usual swagger, like I'm just going to hit the ball and do what I do. Like he was already thinking about how to beat the shift and how it was going to affect him. I don't know if maybe that's getting in his head or what, or maybe he's just still injured, but we did see him put the bat to ball a couple good times against the White Sox. So maybe something is turning around and this long slump is slowly over. But what are your thoughts on, I guess we can do Jose Ramirez or basically anything that happened in that first series or against Chicago?
Well, thanks, man. You really gave me a focus. I think my first thought when I saw Ramirez bunt, though, was what the fuck is this maddening hellscape we're in? Because why is he bunting? My second thought was also, so I've been reading The Science of Hitting again, the Ted Williams book. which is as prescient today as it was when it was actually, if not even more so, because it literally just talks about how modern day hitting is now, written 30 years ago or whatever, you know. And one of the first things he points out is, don't ever swing at the first pitch, ever. Like, it just wasn't something he did, because especially if it's someone you haven't seen before or in a while. And I mean, Ramirez saw Berrios a bunch last year, but not this year. And Berrios looked fantastic, by the way. The Twins might be good. I can't tell, but because the Indians' offense is just so dreadful. But I don't know. The bunting thing again. I know it's driven us mad with Francisco Lindor in the past, but this is on another level. I mean, this is a guy who was one of the best hitters in the league a year ago, and I know he fell off in late August and early September. Why?
I think this is a little different than the Lindor thing, right? Because these aren't sacrifice bunts. He's trying to beat the shift. Like, I don't care how good of a hitter he is. If you can get 1,000 batting average, like get on base every single time, I think you'd do it. But also, the bunts were terrible. That's another part of it.
That's the thing, too. I mean, first of all, all right. So he is fast, obviously. He stole 34 bases last year, and he can do a little bit of everything. Yes. And if he can beat the shift with it, yeah, that's great. But it just looked like he didn't know how to bunt is the other issue. And secondarily, again, it's just why on the first pitch? Why anything? Why is this happening? Why are you doing this? Why against a righty? You know, like why do you, like? I mean, maybe it makes some sense. Actually, it would make more sense to bunt against a righty, I guess, because he falls off that side of the mound. I don't know. Maybe there's some thought to it. But again, no, I don't know. The only thing that made even less sense than that was Tyler Naquin batting third in the first two games of the series.
Yeah, the third one he just was out because it was a lefty. But yeah, the first two.
What?
Just what? That about sums it up, Mayor. Just what?
Look, we're all fans of Tyler Naquin here, right? We all
are.
I think we're all in some sort of a Stockholm syndrome situation at this point with Tyler Naquin.
I'll accept that one. That one. Yeah.
He's around and he's handsome, and we want him to be good. Of the three great young outfielders that they had in their farm system 4 years ago, he's the only one that's healthy and playing for the Indians. So it would be nice if he was good, and he was hurt last year, and he had a really great season before people figured him out. So maybe he could figure that back out. I don't know. Tom Hamilton seems to think he could be good.
Like a Tom Hamilton kind of guy.
He does, right? Hamilton's never had a bad take. So I just...
Loves Eric Hosmer, hates Carlos Santana.
We all have opinions. It's just... I know it's a bad lineup. Man, it's not very good at all. But third... Surely Santana deserves more at bats than him and Jake Bowers. And granted, I don't know. Seems like a bad idea to me.
I think Bowers a bad idea to me that he'd be worth the more batting third or whatever up there based on what's there now. Like, why not? He's put some good contact on. I mean, Tyler Naquin to start the season went 0-6, 6 strikeouts, I think it was.
Yeah.
And then he struck out again.
0-7 with 6 strikeouts, I think.
Was it?
I'm just looking at the...
Oh, I thought he started the first 6 were straight strikeouts.
Maybe that's what it was. Okay, because he was 0-4 with 3 strikeouts in the second game, and then was he just 0-3 in this game? I'm just going through the box scores real quick. Yeah.
It was likely either way. Just and there was, like, no contact made, yeah. And yeah, I don't even see what he did today. Somehow I completely missed every one of his at-bats. I was watching the whole game, but I don't recollect Tyler Naquin doing anything,
well, which is weird.
Yeah, because I mean, they're all getting mowed down again today by Ivan Nova, of all people.
I don't know which one is more upsetting, that one or the Michael Pineda coming back after a year away from baseball. Like, I've seen Ivan Nova be pretty good at times. I've seen Michael Pineda be pretty good at times, too. By the way, he was 1-for-3 with a hit. With a hit, obviously. He was 1-for-3 today. Single. Yeah. So that's something. But,
I do remember that. Yeah, like got through the left side of the infield. All right.
So that's something.
So that's something. Yeah, he did make contact for once. That was good. There's not really, like, so far, it doesn't seem like there's one type that's killing the Indians, does it, to you? I mean, Pineda's his own weird halfway broken pitcher. Jose Berrios is just really good.
Mm-hmm.
And Ivan Nova just keeps the ball in the zone. It doesn't seem like there's one particular way teams are beating the Indians. I think they're just bad right now.
No, yeah. I mean, people say, oh, look at this crappy AAA lineup. And I think it's better than that. I mean, I look at the people on the team, and I think to myself, they have to be better than this, right? Jake Odorizzi is a very good pitcher also. We skipped over him. But I think they're probably better than this. It's just sometimes, you know, I think it was a year or two ago. I think it was Jeff Zimmerman. No, you know, never mind. No, it was Sam Miller wrote a piece about how if you took a snapshot of the first week of that series, and I showed you two different lines, and one was like, you know, like 2 for 12 with one double, and the other one was, you know, 8 for 14 with 3 home runs. Which one's Mike Trout? The answer was obviously the one that where he was 2 for 12 with a double or whatever, you know. It's just how it is sometimes. I mean, Santana's was hitting 167 on Saturday, and he's in 450 now. So we're trapped too much in results because, I don't know, right now we should be looking at the process. But even with all that, that's a lot of strikeouts. You know, strikeouts are, at the end of the day, not the worst way to make an out, but they're also a bit depressing when they happen at this volume. Across the lineup from top to bottom, really, you know. Well, you mentioned Ramirez. He seems to be kind of turning around a little bit. Santana has been his old self pretty much. He just takes a lot of pitches and doesn't quite make solid contact on pitches in the zone like he always has. Bowers is, I don't know. I mean, he's probably the one I'm watching the closest to see if the process is speaking more than just the results. Because, again, he had a hit today. Ringing double to the opposite field. I mean, he's taking pitches. He's drawing walks. He had another walk today, so that puts him at 2 walks, I believe. 2 walks
yeah, I don't
know
if now. I heard right, but they were talking about in the broadcast that he led all rookies in walks last year. I did not know that.
I didn't know either.
He
was, yeah, but he takes pitches that he shouldn't, you know, that he should take, and he usually swing. He had one of his bats today wasn't very good. I think it was a 3-1 count, and he kind of expanded the zone when he really shouldn't have. So that's not encouraging, obviously. But again, that's one at bat among, what is he up to now, 15 or something like that? Yeah, 16 at bats. Like, that's nothing. You know, that's a hiccup. But just like you mentioned, you know, Jose Ramirez has extended slump. Yeah, he didn't look great, but he already had a hit. And it's so goddamn cold, too. You know, like,
it's so cold.
Why? Is like, why are they playing? I don't know.
Why is cold?
Yeah. Why am Minnesota cold? So
everyone always says like the cold shouldn't affect their ability to make contact. But if you're super uncomfortable and cold and you're miserable, I think maybe you're going to be a little less focused.
Yeah, exactly.
So I'm willing to chalk some of that up to the cold. Like, it's not just power that's depleted. Like, if you're miserable at the plate and you're thinking, God, my fingers are fucking cold, then you're not really looking for the pitch maybe as much as you would be otherwise.
Well, and Ramirez is
being a human.
The ball doesn't, honestly, the ball doesn't travel as much when it's cold out is one thing. And also, wind is different when it's wintertime. Ramirez probably missed a home run today because of a breeze blowing in. So if he'd hit a home run and a double today, then we're talking a completely different story. That's what I'm talking too about, you know, process versus results. He hit the ball hard today a bunch, and that's good. And that's really all we should see. We should expect out of him, because I mean, at the end of the day, you can't control where the ball goes most of the time. You just swing the bat hard and make good contact, and, you know, hope for the best. That's all.
Yeah. That's one of the reasons I like StatCast so much early on, yeah. Like for Baseball Savant stuff. Like, if you're going to grind it down to how hard they're hitting the ball and take away everything else, I think you can see some, I mean, it's not enough to conclude anything, but you see a lot better results just looking at how hard they're hitting the ball this early on. Cause you can tell, like, no matter if they're like 1 for 15, they're still hitting the ball super hard.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, if they're 1 for 15 and those 14 outs are all balls in play and they're all fly balls hit, you know, 96 miles an hour, they just happen to be at people or whatever, you know, it's part of the bastard that is baseball. Sometimes it just goes the wrong place. So, or sometimes the wind catches it and blows it in or whatever. So, there's nothing really to talk about yet. They're at 500. I mean, there's nothing really to worry about now. The way this team is built is one that will slowly grind the opposition into dust because of the rotation. Like, it's just odds are they'll win 3 out of every 5 games or whatever, and the other teams just don't have the bullets that they do. So
yeah, it's crazy. We're at the fourth starter right now, and he faced Ivan Nova, who had like a 4.9 ERA last year, and it was Mike Clevenger, who has his velocity up to like 97. And
that's the thing we can't underscore enough here is Mike Clevenger is their third best or their fourth starter. He's not their fourth best starter, I think, at this point, but again, he's their fourth start. He was their fourth starter to start the season, and that's absurd. To be quite honest with you, with as good as he is, I mean we've seen the trend lines. We've seen him be getting better and better. His secondary stuff, I think, doesn't get even enough play. He has a very good slider. I like his curveball. I think his changeup's gotten better. So that's really cool, you know.
But that velocity is the thing right now, because he was talking about it, and Trevor Bauer was too, that he was working in the offseason, I'd assume with Driveline, or even if it was just Trevor, but they're working on getting his velocity up. I think he was like sitting at 93, 94 last year, but he was hitting 97 today, and it was averaging around like 96. So that's real. It's the first game of the season. It can go down, but
I don't think, I mean, I'm just clicking through. He definitely got it up there, but if you look at his numbers, you know, late last year, he had a massive uptick and was sitting at 94.6, 94.9, you know, basically 95 miles an hour on average in September and October. So it's definitely a continuation of a year ago, which isn't to poo-poo what happened. It's proving that last year was, in fact, not a fluke, and that he put the work in. And like you said, he was hitting 97. We saw that last year, too. I remember that start he had in Baltimore. I remember the speed gun saying, you know, 95, 96 at times. And then there was that, I think
that was
start.
The now infamous the gun is hot game.
Yeah, then there was the gun is hot game. Exactly. Yeah. I mean, gun can be as hot as it fucking wants. I don't know. I will say this.
Not hot now, though.
I do think there, I do put some credence into what Francona has said about that. I went to a lot of games at that stadium, and it always seemed like guys were throwing harder than they did anywhere else. And maybe that's just using some of my personal confirmation bias. I don't know, but you know, it could be something. Some guns are just located differently. Like, so yeah,
yeah. At this point, I'm willing to just whatever he says about pitching, I'm willing to believe Trevor Bauer at this point.
Yeah.
Like between him and Clevenger, if they say they worked on something and they think it's going to work, so far I have no reason to doubt what they're saying. Like sure. Trevor Bauer has said he's going to make a slider. He made a slider. He said he's going to make a changeup. It looks like he made a changeup. And now Mike Clevenger's velocity is way up. So if those two, I'm willing to trust them on anything baseball related they say, that it's probably going to happen. And they're serious about the results of it, because I really think they found like something, which is just science, science. But they found it as a way to just make these pitches and measure things so accurately that they're going to be special, I think, going forward. Mm-hmm. And as you wooed there a minute ago, that Trevor Bauer changeup, man, that thing drops right out of the zone. It's ridiculous. I think it's part of the reason that Trevor Bauer likes Roberto Perez so much is that he stopped all those balls and saved the win on, I think, Saturday it was.
I'm making a bunch of GIFs for an article that will be going up on Wednesday, and the changeup plays in one of them. And I just remember watching it, like, whew, damn. As I was recording it, because
sitting alone in the dark in your office, your poor wife's trying to sleep, she hears a woo damn.
I paired it with a fastball he turned early in their back, kind of as a nice demonstration of his sequencing as well, because the location of the two pitches was fucking filthy, in addition to the pitches themselves being filthy. And gee whiz, I mean, that's a heck of a pitch. Whew. I mean,
good Lord. I don't think we can. Again, things that we can't overstate is just the fact that he said, I'm going to make a changeup now, and he made a changeup now. Yeah. That is absolutely insane. I think part of it is just this whole, I'm not going to have a family thing. I'm just going to work on baseball. And he's just measured everything and just makes pitches in the offseason.
Well, he did throw, I mean, let's not forget, he's been working on that for like a year. You know, he essentially stole, quote-unquote, Strasburg's like a year ago. It's just he really focused on this offseason, and it's really paying off too. So
right, well, he's turned it into this killer thing this off season. Like last year was a slider, and now it's this. It's just he's just doing it over and over again. Like remember when he first came up and he had all these pitches that he thought he had, and none of them seemed to work. I wonder if it's just purely the measurements now are that much better that he can do it. Because I would assume before this is what he was trying to do is just craft these pitches and say he had them all. He just didn't have them before, but now he seems to.
I mean, that's what, yeah, this is getting better. I mean, what can you say? I think if you think back to just the beginning of Trevor Bauer's career, he was good. It's just it wasn't consistent or it didn't maintain because he was a 23-year-old or whatever playing baseball at the highest level. Like he, you know, I don't know. It's weird to think that he's anything except you know, a very good young pitcher who was bordering on who was just trying to figure it all out. Like, yeah, okay, fine. He had a 4.19 ERA when he was 26. His fielding independent pitching was, you know, a bunch better. He's striking out a ton of guys, and he pitched 175 innings that year. So, I don't know. I was always on the I think we were all always on the bandwagon that this guy's going to be good because the stuff was so good there. Like, the stuff was just filthy. It's just he's put it together, like you said, and he's just refined it to a point. So,
yeah, and now he's consistent with it, which is the biggest
thing. And now he leads the league in ERA plus at 326. So
that's sustainable for a whole season, I think.
Yeah, I agree with you. Hands down.
Now, are you all worried about Carlos Carrasco? I think Corey Kluber is pretty much set that he's clearly still Corey Kluber, but Carlos Carrasco is the only one who really had a bad outing so far as a starter. Do you chalk that up to a whole lot? Or he was working with Kevin Plawecki. I don't know if that makes a huge difference, but it wasn't Roberto Perez
that
behind the plate.
That is something. Last year, his first start, March 31st at Seattle, 5.2 innings, 7 hits, 5 earned runs, 4 strikeouts, 2 home runs. I thought about that as I was watching him get shelled by the Twins. I don't know. Maybe he just stinks the first time out. Who knows? Maybe he's not good. Who knows? No, I think he'll be fine. I mean, let's go back another year. Let's see how his game logs were first start. 5.2 like innings, 4 hits, 2 earned runs. So, I don't know.
Yeah. He's never been that consistent of a pitcher anyway. He's never been Corey Kluber through a whole season. He just has, right, like, super good games and then pretty bad games.
Right.
And really bad game. And then a super great game for several games in a row, so.
But I think that last year, his first start of the season was, okay, so it was his 6th worst start of the season. This year, that game score was worse, obviously. It was not good at all. 22 was his game score he received. And again, he was not very good at all. I think he was a little bit unlucky with a couple pitches. Gave a few too many fly balls for anyone's comfort. But 10 swing strikes on 65 pitches is pretty good. That's what is that a swing strike rate at? That's like,
you're talking Saturday still, right? Not or Sunday, I mean.
Yeah, March 31st this year. Yes, exactly. Yeah. So I don't know. I thought he looked good at times. He just, it all kind of fell apart on him a little bit. So
yeah, I mean, the Twins are a good lineup. That's like not something to understand.
That's the thing. We can't sleep on the fact that those guys can hit. They're gonna get better too, is the thing, because depending on how much Nelson Cruz has left in the tank, they're still going to get who's the giant guy? Their third baseman,
Miguel Sano.
They're going to get Miguel Sano back, and I don't think his career is over, really, right?
Yeah, and Byron Buxton looked a lot almost good in the series, which is kind of amazing.
Confident, at least. So, and then of course we can't sleep on their catcher, Willian Astudillo.
I was about to mention, not to get too effectively Wildy or a Twins podcast, but good Lord, he's really cool. I want him to be good.
He is. He's. I think he's going to be. I mean, he reminds me a lot of Pablo Sandoval. Just loves to swing at everything, makes great contact, and also is built like a fucking fire hydrant. So
he just absolutely never strikes out. Like, I didn't know about that until just recently. I've always heard like effectively Wild talk about him, but I never actually looked it up. And they're like sub-3 strikeout rates. It's ridiculous.
No, he hasn't. He is the one. Sam Miller did a piece for ESPN recently that was like, who can break these legendary single-season records? And he picked Willian Astudillo to be the guy who could get a 57-game hit streak or whatever, because he never strikes out.
He's going to get really long hit streaks. I have no doubt about that.
Oh, yeah, because, again, he never strikes out. He swings at everything. He makes great contact, and he's strong. He's stronger than I think people give him credit for. Because, again, he is built like a fire hydrant, and fire hydrants are strong. science proves this. So,
and I saw the Twins, I think it was Myja, I can't remember last time, but she used to run Twinkie Town. She brought up how hilarious this is that Astudillo hits in front of Byron Buxton. Because there was one point this weekend where Astudillo was on base and Buxton got a hit. And then he forgot that Astudillo was so slow, so he got caught in the middle. Astudillo still got the score, but he was in a rundown because he was like right behind him and he couldn't get all the way home. So
that's adorable.
Yeah, because Astudillo is always going to be on base. And if Byron Buxton is behind him, he better get moving.
So, Again, they're going to be a good lineup. They're going to be, you know, better than people give them credit for, I think. It's going to be a pretty good rotation. Not, but as I was saying before we recorded, thank God for bad, you know, bad bullpens and on rebuilding teams. The Twins are not a rebuilding team, but they don't have a good bullpen either. So things are going to fall apart for them just as much as they fell apart for the White Sox today. I mean, sure, they'll fall apart for the Indians too, but one would hope
fell apart worse for the White Sox, which is always good.
Oh God, those White Sox!
I'm always going to be worried in the back of my mind, just like last year, that they're going to beat up on all these bad teams and then be bad against the good ones. I just want to see them destroy a good team just once early on, and I'll be good for the rest of the year.
Just cruise into Houston, just blow them out, just win 8-0 every single game.
Yeah, I would be good for the whole year. I don't care what happens the rest, as long as they win the division. Just that one series would hold me over.
Shit, I forgot Rocco Baldelli was a Twins manager.
He is. I don't. That's this cool. is a weird observation, but he looks like the kid who has a PlayStation in your neighborhood, but nobody else does. That's the thing I've always thought about. I'm gonna look at him. Like, his parents' house always vaguely smells like smoke, and he's the one with the PlayStation 2, and you don't know why.
That's such a weird kind of apt statement.
But he does, because he's, I don't know, it's something with his face. I don't know if that's a very, where I grew up, but he just looks like the kid who has the PlayStation.
I wonder if he has
a PlayStation. I'd go over to his house to play Grand Theft Auto 3.
Get your brackets ready. March Madness is here, and the best place to stay on top of all the NCAA tournament coverage? CBS Sports HQ. CBS Sports HQ is a free 24-hour sports network that's built for fans just like you. From nonstop highlights to news and analysis, CBS Sports HQ has got you covered by cutting through the noise of hot takes and fake debates to get smart analysis and helpful highlights for your fantasy teams and beyond. Check out CBS Sports HQ. It's always on and always free. No need to pay a subscription fee or have an expensive cable package. Download the CBS Sports app on your phone, Fire TV, Roku, or Apple TV to start watching today.
So I guess you mentioned there's things not to worry about, but I think one, no matter what, is this old Mr. Francisco Lindor, whose ankle apparently just fucking vaporized. I don't know.
Yeah, right? What's going on here?
Well, he's at the end of his rehab for his thigh, or not his thigh, his calf. Mm-hmm. And then apparently he got caught in a rundown, which in a spring training game, just go down, just fall. I don't care. Don't get in a rundown. But he sprained his ankle, and then he's going to get a second opinion on it. And there's going to be an announcement tomorrow, or they'll find out more tomorrow, which doesn't sound good at all, because he apparently had the appointment today. I'd assume if it was fine, they'd just say, hey, he's fine.
Well, they have to give the note to the horse rider, who has to ride it to the train, who has to take it to the dirigible, who has to fly over the stormy waters of Lake Erie, battling dragons all the way. So it takes a while. That's all. That's all I'm saying.
Is that what you're going to cling to? That's what I'm going to cling to, Merritt. I'm going to hold on to that.
Yeah, it's good. No, yeah, use it. It's nice to use fantastical things and anachronisms as a comfort.
So how worried are you about this horse carrying, dragon riding note that's going to be coming tomorrow?
Man, when I heard they're getting a second point opinion, it really sounded a little bit ominous. But we'll see. I'm really holding firm to the whole, I'm not going to get too worried about this season because I'm excited to watch the young guys develop still, that I wrote about a couple of weeks ago. So I think he'll be fine, probably, maybe, or maybe not. Maybe he'll be very not good, but I'm trying to think of what is the reason that someone gets a second opinion? For one of two reasons. The team is holding him out and he wants to play. Or the team wants him to play, but he doesn't feel he's healthy enough. I think that if it's the second situation, that is worse for the Indians because it will just sour him even more. Granted, he's leaving anyway, but still, if it's the first thing, well, it's just Frankie Lindor wanting to play baseball and the Indians being cautious because they know it's a 162 game season. I think that's an easier conversation to have with a star player. We need you to be healthy for May, June, July, August, and September and October, not just be able to play this week when, again, they're going to play two more games against the White Sox, and then they're going to play the Blue Jays, who are very bad, and then who else is like, and then where's their schedule even go from there?
Yeah, we're still in the midst of where they could have held him out anyway just to keep his calf weak. So I don't think he's missed a whole lot of extra time yet.
So they're not going to play a team that has any semblance of plans for October until Friday, April 19th. Because they're playing the Sox, Blue Jays, Detroit, Kansas City, Seattle. Seattle, I think, is probably the strongest among those teams. And then they have Atlanta, and then they go down to Miami, and then Houston for four. So I would like it if he came back for actually the Miami games. No, actually, the other Miami games, what I care about. Never mind, because I'll be at those ones. So I'd like if he came back for those first Miami games, get to, you know, to get a couple reps in before the Houston series, and then Matt will be happy because they'll sweep the Houston Astros
just
in
demolish the Astros.
And then they'll come down to Miami and beat the Marlins. Well, I mean, maybe not 150 to nothing, because that'd be a long game, and I don't want to spend all day at the baseball park, just some of the day. So, you know, a nice 4-0 win with a shutout by Corey Kluber and Trevor Bauer, or whoever will be pitching. With my luck, I'll probably get... What do you mean, with my luck? It's the Indians pitching staff. I'm lucky no matter who pitches. So
yeah, there's no down day now. There's no more Josh Tomlin or...
Worst case scenario, it's Shane Bieber, and I'm like, cool, I get to see Shane Bieber pitch.
I can't think of what the worst case scenario is. Like, there's not one pitcher where I'd think, oh man, I have to watch this guy.
I know, right?
I guess... Like, I don't know. I guess Carrasco, because there's a chance he'll have one of his bad days, but I really want to watch Clevenger.
He'll just throw a total gem, and he'll just throw, you know, he'll throw a 15 strikeout shutout. And...
Right.
Yeah. Pretty good.
It used to be weird getting stuck with like Josh Tomlin recap games. Like, oh man, I got to recap Josh Tomlin again. But,
well, you know.
But here's a probably too narrative-driven old media idea about Francisco Lindor. Like, what if it's a good thing that he's out for a little while, and then he provides that spark in the middle of the season when he comes back? Because there was nothing last year like that. I mean, 2016 is when he came up and gave that big spark for the Indians in the middle of the season. So, like, what if he's out for, we're talking like a month, 2 months, and then when we're in the middle of the summer and things are starting to drag a little bit, the Indians are up in the division by several games because their pitching staff is still amazing. Mm-hmm. And then Lindor comes back and just, like, gives everybody a shot in the arm again in the middle of the summer. Maybe that wears out by the playoffs, but either way, he's going to be that much healthier in the playoffs. So maybe it's not too terrible if he's out for a little bit, as much as I want to watch him play as soon as possible. But maybe that's just a silver lining of thinking of Lindor being out for a month or more, is that when he comes back, it's going to be basically like promoting a top prospect all over again.
Sure.
It seems it's been a little while since we've had somebody like that.
I mean, I agree with you, but it's just also he'd be coming back from injury, and which means he probably would take a while to round back into form, which is a sad time. Or he'll hit 3 home runs his first game. I don't know. So I would prefer, I prefer to get him back sooner rather than later.
Well, yeah, I prefer he's healthy either way, but yeah.
There's just, I'm not saying the Twins are good, but the Twins aren't bad. And so being able to, you know, hold off some sort of early surge by the Twins, you know what I mean? Like, there's a chance, you know, that's always a thing that could happen, that the Twins could go on an early run and the Indians are kind of in a bit of a dogfight the first half of the season, which would be exciting and fun and interesting and, you know, a little bit stressful, which we didn't have much of at all last year. But I'd rather I just have him come back, if only because got to watch my stars. I'd prefer that shot in the arm to be Jason Kipnis, who comes back and hits like it's 20, whatever one of his good years was, 2015? That was a good year, right? Yeah. Hits like it's 2015 again. That won't happen, but, you know, boy can dream.
That's a conversation to have. Like, that's almost even better than Lindor hitting well, because that's what you expect. But if Kipnis comes back and he is like peak Jason Kipnis again, that's maybe even a bigger boost than seeing Francisco Lindor do really well.
Then
also, because
two good
Lindor's
going to
be good either way.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Yeah.
That'll I agree with you.
It's going to be nice with lineups together either way.
Which, again, I think the lineup is probably better than it is. They put up 5 today against a bad team. Allen doesn't play enough, which sucks. They need to stop using him as a pinch hitter. But again, I think Bowers will be better than he has been. I think Ramirez is a.
Hanley?
Too many Ramirez's. Goddamn, Hanley Ramirez. very interesting choice, because he has been hitting
the ball really hard. Yeah,
and so that could be. I don't know. There's something about. Something very Indians about there being like a bases loaded key situation and a faded star coming up to hit. They signed for a minor league deal. Like, I remember him when he was good. Cool. And him
coming, that guy.
Yeah. Like him coming up and I don't know, maybe coming through or not. I'm just thinking back to like Jason Giambi or Mike Napoli, obviously, was always a good one. Just guys like that who just kind of come through and, you know, they're, end up hitting 178 for the season or whatever, but they had a couple of moments and that's all. And seeing Hanley up there, and I was like, wow, this is like old times. Pretty good.
It is. I mean, it's nice seeing Carlos Santana hitting the ball so well. And and dare I say, when Lindor and Kipnis come back, like, that infield is actually going to be kind of deep. Like, Brad Miller's not a terrible hitter.
No.
And Max Moroff will probably be gone, I think, maybe.
Yeah.
I don't know who else would be, because Brad Miller is your utility guy. So that's a relatively deep infield.
I thought that was a pretty cool signing, the Brad Miller one. I mean, because, again, he's not quite starter material, but if he's a fill-in guy, that's pretty good. Yeah, he hit. I mean, I know he was 2 years ago, but or whatever, but he hit like 26 home runs or something like that a couple years ago. So there's talent there, whether it's that or something, you know, a faded version of that. I don't know.
Yeah, it seems like the Indians thing lately has always been like to find a guy who's one tool away. And like Brad Miller is his contact. He can still hit the ball really hard. He had, like you said, 30 home runs a couple years ago. And then I think that's been the whole thing with this offseason, is finding guys who are just one of the many tools away from being great. And that's really Brad Miller's, if he can do it. And also, he doesn't wear batting gloves, which looks weird, and I love it. So I like Brad Miller.
That means he's not enough of his hands. Batting glove
guys. I know, it's just so weird looking. I guess it's not that different, but just seeing some guy who just looks like he's straight out of 1920. He just needs a mustache and he'll be
usually
set.
It's a much larger man that does that. Right. Has like total mitts for hands, you know? And instead it's just this average sized guy who your eyes kind of glaze across because he looks like every other player on the team. Which, by the way, a buddy of mine was in town for the weekend, and we were watching the Twins game, the one where the Indians won. And I made the observation that I think all the pitchers for the Twins always look exactly the same. And then I was like, you know, I probably just say that because I'm a fan of the Indians, but a lot of the guys from the Indians look exactly the same. Like guys like Stamets and Moroff and Miller to a degree. They're all just kind of, you know, vaguely athletic white guys with a stubble beard. And you just, if you're not looking too close, you're like, which one is this one? I don't even know. So
I guess it just comes along with signing old veterans, right? Like,
yeah. Well, that delicious bias, obviously, but yeah.
Yeah, and especially Moroff and Stamets, they look really similar. They have like sunken eyes sort of kind of thing going on.
Spooky, which, by the way, sunken eyes.
Did you see today that somebody reshared a video of Max Moroff when he was in Little League? And he did one of those like things about his favorite food, and his was chicken tenders, and he's just like an adorable little kid. It's really
Boy loves tenders. He's staying on the team. Never mind. Stamets, you're off.
Get out. Yeah, and then Stamets look really bad. So I still want Yu Chang to do something. If Lindor's out for a long time, I want Chang up there to.
Oh, definitely. To do something. Why not? Right? Like, hey, let the kids play. We've been over this. This is a rebuilding year, a secret rebuilding year.
Yeah, like this is as close as they're gonna get. I mean, one thing we need to talk about, Mayor, is very important. Is who are these red jerseys? They're real good. If you disagree, don't
baby.
Even say anything.
I mean, I think I set my one knock on them is it's too much like the Twins. I'm drawing way too many comparisons to the Twins here. It's bothering me now, but you know, between them keep on winning the division and then falling short constantly and getting they're beat up by the great teams of the other divisions.
Wait, was it you that wrote about that this offseason, or was it Chris?
I don't know. It sounds like something I said at the very least. So
but yeah, Chris pointed out that exact same thing. I think when the red jerseys were announced, is that they look exactly like the Twins. They're slowly turning into them.
Oh, that was me. That was me during a podcast and also an article I wrote. Yes.
Yeah. There you go.
Yes. I double dipped, but yes.
And it's really true. But those they look so good, Merritt. It's hard to fault it because they look great.
You know what would dope, by the way? The Twins ones with the gold piping around the numbers or the letters and stuff. I thought that was pretty cool.
No, gold piping in general is really good.
I still like the red ones. Like, my wife walked by as I was watching and said, ooh, what are these red jerseys? I was like, yeah, they're pretty sweet, huh? Like, they look sharp. They're not they as do. Good as the throwback, like the 70s Reds ones, because they don't have the cool writing and stuff like that. And then also, they're not pullovers, which was always a cool thing about them.
Yeah.
And also, they don't have red pants. But I like them. Yeah, no, they
really, work. I really like the red shirt and white pant look. That's the thing that does it for me. Rick Manning said that they look better with red socks, and I kind of agree with him. That's the only thing missing. I love red socks and red jerseys, so
No, that's a good
look.
The
blue's fine, I guess, but especially like the blue lettering on the red, that's super good.
Well, too many teams, first of all, have red, white, and blue. I think we can both agree with that.
Of course. Yeah.
But too many teams simultaneously use blue as the head secondary color. Like, I think if they could go red hat, red jersey, red socks.
Oh, hell yeah. Give me all the red.
Just red it up, man. You know, I mean, just dump blue as a whole. Like, there's no point even having it. Have a red hat with a white C on it. Now, that's a cool hat. Do that. Indians, do this. I'd buy that hat.
Would that be hard to see, though, on a broadcast?
Is that we have HD television at this point, dude. I just don't think that's a problem anymore.
I have an old TV that I repaired in my office, so not all of us merit. Some of us are on 720, ancient 2007 stuff going on here.
I got HD video on my phone. Like, what are you doing?
It's a big
screen. I like the look of NASCAR of the 1990s. I like to watch hockey, so I can't see anything at all.
I reminisce about the glowing puck in the NHL, and so I just watch it on this.
How did anyone watch any sport ever before HD television?
The puck glow, Merritt. That's how they did it.
I watch video of like Michael Jordan highlights and stuff sometimes, and I'm just like, this is garbage. It's trash.
Are you talking about the defense or the quality?
Both. The quality, but like I just remember thinking back, and the good, you know, the good video does exist in like the NBA vaults or the, like, there's HD video out there somewhere of like Roberto Clemente because it's on film, but I feel like I remember watching it. It was much more crisp. But then, of course, that happens like when I go back and play, you know, Grand Theft Auto 1 or whatever. Even like an older version. Like I remember when I bought MLB The Show like last year, or whatever. After playing MLB 11 The Show for years, and I was like, this is stupid. I can't deal with these graphics. So yeah.
I think baseball, as in general, like ages worse than other sports. Like football, if you watch a game, I was looking at one from 2006 just for nostalgia because I watched as a teenager. It looks like it could broadcast today, everything about it. But if you watch like a 2006 baseball game, it already looks so dated. And I guess it's a lot of it's on Fox, and Fox is absolutely horrendous. But
they're constantly changing the graphics and the chyrons and stuff right. like that too.
Yeah,
but, you know, like I want to watch
like there's not
like,
enough.
Like I want to watch cool videos of like that home run that Manny Ramirez hit for the Red Sox in the playoffs. That's a great video where he just hit it and then put his arm straight up. It was Bill Simmons's avatar on Twitter for a long time. I want to watch that video a few times because Manny kicked ass, whatever team he was on. And I just watched him like, this is 5 pixels. How is this anything?
And then I also watched like old football games, like watching it's self-inflicted damage, but like watching the drive, like watching 80s football. There's just something so like, I wasn't even born in the 80s, but it's still nostalgic watching those broadcasts.
It's like, it's cool because it's like, it looks old. You know, like I watch like 1970s right. Raiders highlights and I go, yeah, they really did literally murder men on the field.
They look so much bigger too. And they're really not. Huge. Their shoulder pads are just gigantic.
Well, and like the way that jerseys aren't fitted, you know, they kind of hang right. loose at the sleeves and stuff. And they just, well, the pads are bigger too, is the thing. Like a lot of these guys, they just look. Just mammoth, like, and for some reason you have defensive ends with numbers like 74 or something. Who are you?
I think the pads are the reason that people used to think football players were so big and intimidating because they're so big. I want to see like players today wear those kind and see how big they look,
because
they would be gigantic.
Like cowboy collars and stuff like that, man. Remember cowboy collars? Those things ruled. You guys look like just like gladiators or like golems formed from stone.
And even like if you watch like the drive game or any old Browns, I don't know if it's, I don't watch many other than like old Browns games, but it seems like Municipal Stadium was always covered in garbage.
Yeah.
It's just like newspapers floating around.
Because it
never
was.
See that anymore. Yeah, right. It was literally covered in garbage.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's everywhere.
It was also
like,
built on a landfill, so it had bad drainage, you know? Yeah.
It's fun stuff.
Ben Davidson played defensive end for the Raiders. Also, he starred in Conan the Barbarian, the movie. And we're number 83. I remember seeing that going, what is it? What is this? You know, numbers. What are they? But, you know, again, a mammoth man whose nickname was Big Ben Davidson. It's a good one.
There you go. Yeah, and I never even think of numbers in baseball that much. I know, like, Griffey's number and Lindor's number and...
really?
Merritt, quick, what's Carlos Santana's number?
41.
Oh, shit.
Well, I know this because my password on my old computer was Santana 41 for a long time.
Well, then we go ahead and log into Facebook.com.
Actually, it was Santana 42 to throw people off.
All right, Merritt, think about it. Roberto Perez.
59?
No, you are... Fuck you. Why are you making me look...
No, 59 is Carlos Carrasco. Excuse me.
There you go. See, I didn't know that either. I don't know anybody's number. I don't know why. I look at him all the time. Trevor Bowers?
Not 31.
It's in the 20s. I think it might be 21.
No, it's definitely not 21.
Are you sure?
I'm pretty sure. Oh, this is tough.
Isn't, well, like, it famous ones. Tough.
I mean, obviously there's the famous ones because they're all the numbers that are retired by the
right,
by the Yankees.
47, Trevor Bauer.
Yeah, okay, yeah. What's Corey Kluber's, like 32 or something like that? 28. Podcasting 28. Okay, yeah,
I know, right?
He wore 34. Like,
so let's go to the NFL.
He debuted at 34. That's what I remember. I guess it's jersey. He debuted for two innings in.
Now, Mayor, what innings. Was Christian Ponder's number, the quarterback for the Vikings?
13.
Wasn't it seven?
No, it was 11, I think.
I thought it was seven. Well, I just ruined my own. I think it was seven.
Wait. It was seven. Also, who cares?
See, why
about
do I
Christian
know that?
Ponder?
I never watched Christian Ponder. Why do I know he was number seven?
Well, I think because you look at them from further away, and so all you see is the number. Like, the numbers work better in football and stuff like that. But, you know, like 24 is several different people, obviously, but mainly Willie Mays.
It's clearly multiple people. Yeah, there are a lot of people that use numbers.
21 is Roberto Clemente. Three is Babe Ruth. Four is Gehrig. Five is DiMaggio. Six is Berra? I think Berra. Seven is Mantle. One is... Fuck, who was one? Two is obviously Jeter.
Does it have to be Jeter?
I know,
who, by the way, is just blanderizing the Marlins, and it really sucks.
It really sucks what he's
Did
done
Did you
to
see
that
what they replaced the statue with? It's just
trash.
Like some advertiser's yacht out there.
I'm going down there at the end of the month, and I'm pissed that they've ruined it. Oh, six was Joe Torre. That's what it was. I'm very unhappy about the entire situation because, like, they changed the color of the seats. It just looks like they took all the worst parts of Yankee Stadium and put them there.
Right, it's an indoor Yankee Stadium now.
It's just boring. Like, we need to get the eyes back on the field to watch this. Why are we doing this? What are we here to watch?
Nobody wants to watch your shit team.
No one's ever wanted to watch them when they were good, and now they want. By the way, the Yankees have a lot of retired numbers.
They do, yeah.
They have eight retired twice, for God's sake.
So do you have any other thoughts on the opening series or Chicago before we get to social media questions? I think we covered
I think the strikeouts are a little overblown as a thing. The weather a little bit. Pitchers are usually a little bit further ahead than hitters, I think, especially these days, you know, with all the work they do in the offseason. Tyler Naquin did say that he's starting to get his timing down, which is a thing. So I'm not going to fret too much about it. I think the one thing we can all think about is how many times the last couple of years did they finish, you know, April at 500? You know, like last year they were 15-12 at the end of April. The year before that they were 14-10. The year before that they were 10-11, you know, and that was the year that they went to the World Series. Like what I said right earlier, and this is why one of the two reasons why I'm still having fun with this season, the pitching staff is such that it just grinds teams into dust. You know, just, they're going to win three out of every five games, basically. I think the bullpen will be better than it is. Jonathan Edwards, by the way, I think he's going to be good.
You just want your rookie of the year pick to be right.
I did pick him, didn't I? Well, he had a sequence. I think it was his first. It was the Saturday game. Yeah, he had a sequence against someone he was facing where, and this is a guy who throws 95, 96, right? He just went like curveball, curveball, curveball. And I think that that's a demonstration of trust in a curveball that is, I don't know, I think vital to a young guy kind of making his way in baseball. So, no, I don't know. I think it'll be, was it Saturday? I think it was Saturday. Saturday or Sunday, I don't know.
Yeah, that's the one Edwards got the win was Saturday. That's when
you're Saturday? Okay, yeah. So yeah, I thought that was good, I suppose. Granted, it ended up being slider, curveball, curveball. Yeah, just a Jonathan scope. Granted, it ended up being a line out, so that's not encouraging, but you know, line out doesn't say anything. And then he went fastball slider against the next guy. So I don't know. He's got good stuff, and I think he'll be a good piece for the bullpen. And as we said before, bullpens are assholes. You know what I mean?
that's what it comes down to. Bullpens are assholes.
Like what the Indians had like the last couple of years was ridiculous. You know the bullpens of the A's or the Yankees are going to collapse at some time or other. It's just what they do. Sucks. Bullpens by their very nature are fickle. So what are you going to do? But I don't know.
Yeah.
I didn't enjoy them all the way, but I also didn't watch at least one of the games, so what can you do? I was looking at Flowers instead.
Some of them were enjoyable, but yes, Monday was a lot of fun. Today, while we're recording, was a lot of fun to watch.
I just hate watching it because I watch the guys be cold and I feel cold.
Yeah, that is. It doesn't feel like good baseball yet until they're warm.
Like, I was thinking about this today. I was listening to on the way home from work, and I'm just like, you know what? This is what early season baseball. I'm like, why are they playing this cold? Oh, wait, it's always like this. Never mind. Like,
right.
Like, we always think of baseball as being this game of the summer, and it's really not. It's a game of three different seasons completely. Hell, I mean, sometimes it snows, so it's yeah. I mean, it is most of the summer, sure, but like, you know, like a third of the season is played not in the summer, all of April. Well, actually, technically, when I get into it, all of April, all of May, and most of June are technically spring, and then after September 21st, if you get into, that's 4 months, basically. 4 months of a 7 month season played not in the spring. Checkmate. Or summer. Checkmate.
Checkmate. Take that.
According to the moon.
Every Monday, we ask everybody on Twitter and Facebook for your questions. We got a couple of them this week. The first one will go with TheLand0619. He asked, Roberto is obviously great behind the plate, but what is the bare minimum he has to do offensively to still be considered an overall positive asset player? I think just calling him great behind the plate at this point is an understatement. He is one of the best behind the plate, whether it's framing or stopping balls or stopping runners. He is super good.
There's a reason why the Indians were comfortable dumping a technical all-star for him.
Yeah, like, I think all he has to do is be his, 2016 self, where he had a 73 WRC plus. He had a slash of 207, 291, 373. He does that for a whole year and is extremely good behind the plate, fine. Just stick him at the bottom of the lineup, let him soak up some pitches for a little bit, because that's one thing he's doing this year is a lot better, like what he used to do when he was somewhat good offensively. He took a lot of pitches.
Yeah,
he took like the fourth most through the first three games. So if he keeps doing that, I don't really care what he does, as long as he keeps doing what he's doing behind the plate and taking a bunch of pitches, occasionally run into one, maybe get a home run or two and draw some walks, and I'm good with that.
I will say one thing that isn't really being thought about very much is he's never worked more than 580 innings in a season, right? Which works out to, because how many innings are there in a season? 162 times 9, 14, basically a third of a season. Now, no one expects a catcher to go every single game, but you expect, 120 games, I guess? That sound about right? 130 games, I guess, out of your starting
catcher. I guess it depends on how good your backup catcher is and how.
Right, exactly. Last year he worked 62. The year before that, or 58 rather. Year before that, 71 with 66 starts. So that's because he was back. You know, I mean, part of it was Yan Gomes was hurt for one of those seasons, but also he just they didn't have a starting catcher. They had two starting catchers basically. So I mean, you look at a team like, I don't know, like what? How many did TJ Realmuto work last year? That's a good starting point. He did 125 games last year. So if we're going to him doing 125 games, performing at the level he is, yeah, no, I think if he performs like he did in 2017, that'd be great. That's the most games, most at bats, and everything he's had ever in his career. And what? It's not like he was a stud or anything like that, but he's a smidge over the Mendoza line. He was shitty offensively, but he was great behind the plate, good enough that he was worth almost a full win in basically almost half the game time that we're hoping from him, right? And as I've mentioned a couple of times, I don't think that any statistic truly captures the impact of a great catcher. I just, as an example, I was watching the Cubs game tonight. What's his name? Wilson Castillo, right? That's their catcher, right?
Contreras.
Wilson Contreras, sorry.
Yeah.
Wilson Castillo. Who the fuck is that? Jesus.
I think he's on the White Sox, right?
Right. That's what it is. Okay. he's really made his framing much better, and he turned a bunch of balls by Kyle Hendricks into strikes. And this is just a thing that isn't really, it's measured now, but it wasn't measured until very recently. Like, they just updated wins above replacement of FanGraphs to include framing and things of that nature. And there's more to what Perez does to keep runs off the board than just that. You mentioned his ability to block the various changes by Bauer and things like that. That keeps runs off the board. So I think as long as he's shitty but not a black hole, I guess, that is a goal to achieve, right? I think, like you said, if he's somewhere resembling his 2017, that'd be great.
Yeah, shitty but not a black hole is all I need from him at the plate, really.
I mean, if he gets 25 extra base hits, I think that if he can get his on base percentage to 30% to 300, basically, I think we're riding high here because he's just that good behind the plate. Again, there's a reason they allowed, or they traded away Gomes. I mean, at least one reason besides cutting salary and everything like that. But yeah, no, I think we'll be fine.
So we'll finish up with one more from at Joseph Zucker. He said, Hanley Ramirez is slugging .556 with a .919 OPS through three games. Mm-hmm. Do you see him taking the starting shortstop job from Francisco Lindor? I'm going to go, yeah.
Yeah.
I think Lindor, he's gone. Just trade him now. Cut him.
Well, I mean, no, he did say this. That was through three games. But how is he doing through four games, huh?
Oh, no.
Now we got to bring in the advanced stats of using a fourth game of sample size. Ooh, numbers. He's now only slugging He's now only hitting, 795 is what his OPS now is. So the OPS garbage. Updated within the... Yeah, so he's trash. Get his ass out of here. Cut.
Lindor's job is officially safe again.
Yeah, whew, dodge that bullet for now until tomorrow. One more day, Frankie. You have one more day every day. What have you done for me lately? That's the game.
Right now, or I guess before this game, Hanley had an 18.2% walk rate, which is really good. So,
Yonder Alonso ended today with a 926 OPS.
Indians lost the trade. Clearly, Alex Call, where are you? You got to get up here and help us now.
Son of a bee sting. Oh, well, what are you going to do?
All right, Merritt, that's going to be our show. Next week, we'll have even more baseball to talk about. Hopefully not as much awful offense, and we'll get some fun going. Talk to you then.
I'll be here.
Bye.
Trash articles full of GIFs and no analysis because there's something going on that I can talk about. The headline.
Make sure you look. Look in that post I did today about what was it? The takeaways thing. There's like a little image slider you can use. It seems like you might get some use out of that.